praise to Srila Prabhupada. Namom Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunnavadi Paschatta Deshutarine. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya. So how is everybody doing? So you ready for the second day's seminar? And so Srimad Bhagavatam is considered to be the spotless Puran. The Puranas generally describe the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His devotees. There are 18 Puranas, and of them all, Srimad Bhagavatam is considered to be the topmost. And it is also considered to be the spotless Puran because other Puranas have tinges of material contamination, the effects of the modes of material nature. Some Purans have the effects of mode of ignorance, some have mode of passion, and some have mode of goodness. Even material goodness is a material mode. But beyond all these modes of material nature is the spotless Puran, which is Srimad Bhagavatam. Spotless because it's not affected by the modes of material nature. It's in the mode of pure goodness. In the material nature, there is goodness, but that goodness is tinged by some modes of ignorance and passion. But the pure goodness is the mode that is beyond this material nature. It's a spiritual, totally spiritual. And another symptom of a Mahapuran, which is again, Srimad Bhagavatam is a Mahapuran. There are many Purans, but Srimad Bhagavatam is the Mahapuran, the greatest of all Purans, because Bhagavatam has 10 symptoms. Those 10 symptoms, Purans describe a few aspects. Some Purans describe 5, some 7, but Bhagavatam describes 10 aspects of spiritual knowledge. And those 10 aspects are sarga, meaning creation, visarga, sub-creation, sthanam, or the situations of the planetary systems, poshanam, how everything is being sustained or maintained, and utayo, the procreation or continuity of the lineage, and manvantar, the changes of manus. Yesterday we described how in a day of Brahma there are 14 manus, and each section of manu is considered to be one shift in the day of Brahma. There are 14 shifts consisting of 71 chaturyugas, divayugas. So these changes of manus have been described. Manvantara, then Ishanu Katha, the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as he incarnates in this material nature. Then, mukti, liberation, nirodha, cessation of material existence altogether, and ashrayaha, samambonam, the ultimate conclusion, the ultimate consideration of the Supreme, Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that is Krishna. So Bhagavatam is the Puran where Krishna has been perfectly described. Krishna is not an incarnation. Krishna is the origin of all incarnations. All the incarnations are Krishna's. Ete changsha kala pungsha amsa, meaning parts, and kala means parts of the parts and thereof. So Krishna is that personality, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whom all the other incarnations have emanated. And in this way, Krishna's identity as the origin have been described in Brahma Samhita, as there are 2-3 verses describing Krishna's incarnations. Like one verse is describing Ramadi Murti Shukala Niyame Natishtan. Nana avataram akarod bhuvaneshu kintu Krishna swayam samabhavat paramah pumanju. The different incarnations, Ram, Varaha, Nishinga, Kurma, etc., Ram, Adi, Murti, Shu, Kala, Niyamena, Tishtan. They are expansions or expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishnastu swayam samabhavat paramah pumanja. Paramah pumanja. Parama means supreme and Puman means personality. That's why Prabhupada used that expression as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Prabhupada's description, Krishna is just not a God. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because there is a lot of confusion about gods. In the Vedic literatures, there are 2 concepts. Bhagavan and Devatas. Devatas are the demigods who are actually controllers of different affairs of the material nature. In material nature, there are different departments, like fire department, wind department, water department. Just like in a state we see, say in Los Angeles, has the electric supply department, water supply department, public works departments and so forth, education department, finance department. Similarly, in the universal affairs also there are different departments. And different demigods are the controllers of those different departments. They are known as devas, devatas. And they number 330 million. There are 330 million of them, Tetrish Koti, devatas, taking care of various affairs of the material nature. But Krishna is not a personality who is taking care of the departments of different affairs of the universe. But Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the original creator, who is the original maintainer, and who is the original annihilator. All these 3 things are conducted by this personality. And he is not a part of this material nature. He is beyond material nature. So that is, and he expands, and his incarnations come down to this material nature to take care of law and orders of the material nature. When his employees cannot take care of the affairs, the legal or law and order of the material nature, he himself comes to establish the law and order. That is Krishna's Vishnu expansion. As Vishnu, he deals with the affairs of the material nature. Krishna, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, has nothing to do with the material nature. He is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. But still he comes once in a day of Brahma. So the description of that personality, who is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, has been perfectly and most wonderfully described in Srimad Bhagavatam. Especially in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And then also Krishna has three different stages of his pastimes. Krishna's Dwarka Leela, Krishna's Mathura Leela, and Krishna's Vrindavan Leela. And that way it has been described that Krishna in Dwarka is perfect. Perfect. Purna. He is perfect and complete. In Dwarka. In Mathura, he is more perfect and more complete. But in Vrindavan, he is most perfect and most complete. Yesterday, briefly, we discussed about that because how it has been ascertained. It has been ascertained in various ways by our previous acharyas, by the Goswamis. And one of the ways they have calculated it is that if it is a matter of relationship, there are five kinds of relationships. Five kinds of favorable relationships. Neutrality, servitorship, friendship, parental and conjugal. And these relationships gradually, successively become more and more intense. Like, neutrality is a positive relationship. It's a favorable relationship. Neutral. Neutral means neither inimical nor loving. It's neutral. Love is there, some sort of love is there, but at least it's not being manifest. There's no activity to express that love. That expression of love begins from servitorship. The servant loves the master, therefore he serves him. Just out of love, the servant serves the master. Then even more intense is friendship. Like if we consider, like your neighbor, the relationship that you have with your neighbor, whom you don't really have any relationship, but you know that they're there. You see him going to his work, coming back. On Sundays you see that he is mowing his lawn and then going to the supermarket with his wife to do shopping. But you don't really have any exchange with him. Once in a while when you see him, you just greet him, saying, "Hello, how are you?" Now, the relationship that you have with your servant is more intense than with this neighbor. The relationship that you have with your friend is even more intense than the relationship that you have with your servant. The relationship that you have with your father and mother is more intense than with your friends. And the relationship between lover and beloved, or you can say husband and wife, is even deeper than the relationship with the parents. So in this way we can see that love gradually becomes intensified through these different types of relationships. So the Goswamis are considering that, Jiva Goswami is considering that, the different types of relationships are there, but with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the relationships in the spiritual sky is simply like that of a master and servant. And some yogis meditate upon the Lord in their meditation. They see the Lord in the core of their hearts. And that is there, that is the relationship in neutrality. Then there are relationships of active relationship of servitorship. So everyone is either, everyone actually is a servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Akale Ishwar Krishna Ar Shab Bhritto. Only Krishna is the Supreme Lord and Master, and everyone else is His servant. That is the position of the Supreme Lord. He is the only Lord and Master, and everyone else is His servant. Then the question is, then what about friendship? Now, whatever is there in the material nature must be existing in the spiritual nature, because the material nature is a reflection of the spiritual world. So whatever is there in the reflection, we must conclude, we must assume that they must be existing in the spiritual world. Whatever is there in the reflection, they must be there in the original thing. So if there is friendship, there must be relationship with the Lord in friendship in the spiritual sky. Yeah, what is the difference between material nature and spiritual nature? What's the difference between material nature and spiritual nature? The difference between material nature and spiritual nature is, material nature is the world where everyone is thinking that he is the center of everything. In the material nature is the place where every living entity thinks that he is the center of everything. And spiritual world is the world where Krishna is the center of everything. That is the difference between material and spiritual. Where you put yourself in the center, that's material. When you put Krishna in the center, that is spiritual. So spiritual nature means Krishna in the center. Now I have relationship of friendship, parental, conjugal, etc. So we have to understand that this relationship must be available also in the spiritual sky with Krishna. Now searching for those relationships, we go to different areas. Vaikuntha, not available. Ayodhya, little bit of friendship is available in Ajodhya, with the Lord. Hanuman, at the height of his relationship with the Lord, his Lord is asking him, Hanuman, what do you want? And Hanuman, who is in the mellow of servitorship, is telling the Lord, my Lord, if you so desire, please give me your embrace. Give me your embrace means please allow me your friendship. There is some other sort of friendship also available. Lord Ram establishes friendly relationship with Sugriva. They kind of became friends. With Bibhishan also there is little bit of friendship. In this way there is some friendship. With Guhak there is some friendship. But those friendships are with the understanding that Lord Ramchandra is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore the friendship is not really becoming complete. The friendship is not manifesting properly. In Dwarka we see the friendship is even little deeper than that, like Krishna's relationship with Arjuna, Krishna's relationship with Uddhava and so forth. Krishna's relationship with Satyaki. But when you go to Vrindavan, then you find perfect friendship. And not only friendship, in Vrindavan you see perfect parental love. There is no barrier of awe and reverence there. Barrier of awe and reverence means when you see that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you can't really deal with Him in that way. As a friend. There is a feeling of awe and reverence. Oh, He is the Supreme Lord. But in Vrindavan that feeling is not there. Because in Vrindavan Krishna is not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Vrindavan Krishna is a cowherd boy. It may be difficult to establish friendship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but with a cowherd boy, it is not difficult to establish friendship. He's a cowherd boy. The feeling may be, oh, I am a city boy. He is a village boy. So I am better off than he is. Or the feeling that Krishna is... The main feeling is that Krishna is my friend. That's their only consideration. Krishna is my friend. That's the only way I know Him. And that's the only thing that I care. I have no other consideration. Sometimes people say that this Krishna is God. Maybe. That is their attitude. Krishna is killing these demons. Yeah. My friend is so powerful that he can kill all these demons. My friend is so wonderful that he can lift a mountain and hold it on his little finger for 7 days, giving us protection from Indra's onslaughts. So that is Vrindavan. That's why in Vrindavan Krishna is most perfect. All these wonderful loving relationships are most wonderfully manifest in Vrindavan. So that Supreme Personality of Godhead performs its eternal pastimes in Vrindavan, but there is a feeling that He left Vrindavan and went to Dwarka. So that is what we are discussing here. What did Krishna do when He went to Dwarka? A few things that He did. We have discussed yesterday how Krishna came and saw the city of Dwarka. He, along with his friends, he is actually seeing the city of Dwarka. And he is amazed. The village boys came to the city and they are completely awestruck. That is their initial impression, that this is so wonderful. Look at these beautiful palaces. Look at these people dressed up in such a wonderful way. Look at, they're just amazed to see that. And Krishna is behaving just like a village boy. Then he goes and meets this, has this encounter with his washerman. Hey, what are you carrying? We are carrying the clothes for the king. Our clothes are not really so fancy. We are just wearing village garments. But we came here as the guest of the king. So will you please give us some of those dresses? And he says, how dare you want to use the dresses that are meant for the king? It's an offense. Krishna, anyway, he has so many. If you give a few, nothing will happen. But he became very offensive, the washerman. And Krishna dealt with him so very wonderfully. But at the same time, there is this flower garland, flower man, florist. And he goes out of his way to invite Krishna just by being attracted to Krishna, by Krishna's beauty. and offers Krishna the garland. And Krishna tells him, I bless you that you'll have all the opulences. And tell me, what else do you want? What do you want? And he says, please allow me to remember you all the time and serve you with the best of my ability. Krishna grants him that boon. Yes, your desire will be fulfilled. Just because out of his love for Krishna, he offered him some garlands. So that is how Krishna reciprocates. You deal with Krishna with animosity, Krishna will deal with you with animosity. Not with animosity, he'll treat you accordingly, the way you want to see him. Je jatha mang prapaddante, tans tathaiva bhajamah. The way one deals with me, the way one surrenders unto me, accordingly I reciprocate. So through his pastimes, Krishna is simply reminding us about that fact. You become inimical to Krishna, you'll be dealt with him. You become submissive to Krishna, he will give you all protection. All protection. And that's what we are seeing through his pastimes. Whenever the devotees are in difficulty, Krishna is going out of his way to help them. Rescue them. Saving them from all kinds of calamities. And so yesterday I discussed up to Pradyumna's. Pradyumna was stolen by Sambarasura, a demon, who got to know from Narad Muni that Krishna's son Pradyumna will kill him. So in order to prevent that possibility, just after Pradyumna was born, this demon kidnapped, stole Pradyumna from the maternity home and threw him in the ocean. But nothing happened to Pradyumna. The newborn baby, but nothing happened to him. All kinds of wonderful things happened to him. A fish swallowed him. And although the fish swallowed Pradyumna, but Pradyumna was still alive. And the examples have been given that there are many instances when one can remain alive. One example is Indra was swallowed by Vritrasura. But still Indra was alive in the belly of Vritrasura. Agasura swallowed all the cowherd boys. But still the cowherd boys were alive in Agasura's belly. Bakasura swallowed up Krishna, but still Krishna was alive in Bakasura's belly. So by the divine arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything is possible. That's another thing that we have to understand. By the divine arrangement of the Lord, everything is possible. And so when we are dealing with the scriptures and the descriptions of the scriptures, there is no room for doubts. That is one thing that the spiritual teachers teaches us. When you're dealing with the scriptures, don't doubt. Even if you don't understand, if you can't believe, accept them. Because the scriptures are dealing with the truth and nothing but the truth. The scriptures are dealing with the absolute truth. There may be contradictions. But those contradictions are perfectly harmonized. Apparently they are contradictions because our limited intellect, our limited intelligence cannot conceive of it. An example is, like in one place scripture says that stool is dirty. So dirty that whenever you touch it, you must go and take a bath. so dirty that even after one passes stool himself, he must take a bath. But then at the same time, they're saying that this cow's stool, cow dung, is so pure that even a temple room can be sanctified with that. It's a contradiction. But take the cow dung to the laboratory and taste it. What will you find? The most wonderful antiseptic qualities in the cow dung. So that is why whatever has been presented in the scriptures, we have to accept them as the truth and nothing but the truth. And on top of everything, when you are dealing with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what can be impossible for Him? That's why Prabhupada very emphatically told us to read Bhagavad Gita first before entering into Srimad Bhagavatam. Why? Because in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna Himself is explaining His identity. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is explaining our identity being spiritual, and He is establishing His identity as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We are spirit souls, He is the Supreme Soul. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So only with that understanding we can properly delve into Krishna's pastimes. Because His pastimes are amazing. What is impossible for Him? What to speak of His pastimes? Or consider what He is doing? There are innumerable universes, right? And those universes are floating in the space. Can you make this stay in the space? Can we make this little petal stay on the space? But Krishna is making the universes float on the space. That is how inconceivable Krishna's potency is. So if we get to hear that Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill with His left hand and held it with His little finger on His left hand for 7 days, what's the big deal? So, that is how when we are dealing with Krishna's pastimes, we have to recognize that Krishna, for Krishna, nothing is impossible. For Krishna, everything is possible. Now, Krishna, yesterday we discussed about Krishna's marriage with Rukmini. So, then after that, Krishna got married gradually to Satyabhama. Satyabhama was the daughter of a king called Satrajit. And Satrajit recognized that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his daughter was the goddess of fortune. And his daughter just wanted to marry Krishna. Her only desire was to marry Krishna. And Satrajit was the worshipper of sun god. And this daughter was very, very attached to sun god. And all she was praying to him that she could get Krishna as a husband. Krishna Nitta Sangamartha Padma Bandhu Radhika. In order to get constant association of Krishna, this girl was worshipping sun god. Padma, sun here has been described as Padma Bandhu. Meaning Padma means lotus and Bandhu means friend. Why sun has been addressed as the friend of lotuses? Because when the sun comes up, the lotuses bloom. So sun is the friend of lotuses. And she worshipped sun god just to get constant association of Krishna. Nitya Sangamartha, for the sake of getting constant association of Krishna. So Satrajit, knowing his daughter's heart, brought his daughter to Krishna and offered her to him. Then once one episode took place that Krishna was blamed for stealing Samantaka jewel. Samantaka jewel also belonged to Satrajit. And Krishna wanted him to offer that Samantaka jewel to Ugrasen, the king. Because the understanding is all the best things should be, all the best of the things should be given to the king. But Satrajit declined. And as a result of that, Satrajit's brother got murdered. When Satrajit's brother got murdered, when he was wearing that jewel, Samantaka jewel, then, because Krishna wanted the Samantaka jewel, they thought that Krishna stole that Samantaka jewel and killed him, Prashen. But actually Prashen was killed by a lion. And now the blame went to Krishna. So in order to relieve himself from that blame, Krishna went to rescue Samantaka jewel. He went and he found that Prashen was actually killed by a lion. And then after a few distance, he came across the dead lion. He realized that somebody killed that lion. And so, following the footsteps, he came to a cave. And he went inside the cave. And then he found that one child is playing with the Samantaka jewel. So when he tried to take the Samantaka jewel, then Jambavan, the king of the bears, came. Jambavan was an associate of Lord Ramchandra. He was an extremely powerful person. And Krishna had a fight with Jambavan. For a long time they fought. Nobody could defeat each other. Then Jambavan used to offer flowers. He was offering flowers to Lord Ramchandra. Remembering Lord Ramchandra, he offered the flowers. And he noticed that as he offered the flowers are going to Krishna's feet. So then he realized that this Krishna is his master, Lord and Master Sri Ramchandra. So recognizing that, he fell at his feet and begged forgiveness and submitted himself, surrendered himself. And then as a token of his appreciation, he offered his daughter Jambavati. So Jambavati was Krishna's third queen. Then after Krishna met the Pandavas, Krishna, although knew that his brothers, Pandavas were his brothers and he heard about them, and the Pandavas also heard about their glorious cousin, Krishna, but they never met. Because when they were young, Krishna was in Vrindavan. And then they escaped from the conspiracy to kill them, burning them in a house of shellacks. So they were in exile. They were not in exile, they were hiding. They were just, they escaped, but they did not reveal their identity. And disguised as brahmanas, they were just wandering around. In Draupadi Sayambara, Arjun actually won Draupadi in disguise of a brahmana. And in that assembly, Krishna also was present. So that is the first time Krishna actually met Arjuna. And since then, they became very, very intimate friends. So, the Pandavas established their kingdom in the Indraprastha. And so one day, Krishna and Arjuna were traveling, they went to Jamuna. And they were just walking, wandering there. And there, they saw that one extremely beautiful woman was performing severe austerities on the bank of the Jamuna. So Krishna told Arjuna to find out who this girl was. So Krishna went and Arjuna went and asked her who she was and why she was performing such austerity. So the girl said that she wanted to have Krishna as a husband. She wanted to have the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a husband. Therefore she was performing austerities. Then Arjuna told her, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is here. And he reported to Krishna that this is what this girl is one performing austerity for. So then Krishna said, okay, bring her. And Krishna fulfilled her desire by accepting her as his wife. So in this way Krishna got married to the fourth queen, Kalindi. Then there was a king called Nagnajit, and he had an extremely beautiful daughter. Her name was Nagnajit. Actually her name was Satya, but sometimes the daughter is identified by the identity of the father. So, therefore, since she was the daughter of Nagnajit, King Nagnajit, she was identified as Nagnajiti, or daughter of King Nagnajit. So, this Nagnajiti was extremely beautiful, and his father knew that his daughter was actually the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi. So who can win the hands of Lakshmi Devi? Only the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he had, a condition, just as Janak, recognizing Sita's identity, made the condition that anybody who can string the bow of Lord Shiva could win her as his wife. Why? Because who could string the bow of Lord Shiva? Either Lord Shiva himself or someone superior to Lord Shiva. So that is how he made that arrangement. So now with Nagnajiti, that was the arrangement that her father made. And what was the arrangement? His father had seven ferocious bulls. They are not ordinary bulls, extremely ferocious bulls. They were actually some cursed demigods, took the form of a bull. Even with one, they couldn't deal. And now his condition was that if anybody can deal with the seven bulls, then he can win Nagnajiti. So many kings and princes came, but they all left. Some of them left with leaving their body behind. Some of them left with broken ribs and broken legs. In this way, extremely injured, they all disappointed, they left. So when Krishna then got to know about that, Krishna decided to come and claim her. So her father was very happy to hear that when Krishna came. And he told that, look, there's a condition that you have to subdue these seven bulls. Krishna said, no problem. So Krishna went to the arena, the bulls were released. We can see that bull fight also originated in the Vedic culture. But of course they didn't kill the bulls. The only bull that was killed by Krishna was Arishtasura, but he was a demon. Anyway, so what did Krishna do then? Krishna expanded himself into seven forms. and dealt with that, dealt with those seven bulls. He defeated those bulls, brought them under control, put the noose around them, and so this is how Nagnajiti was won by Krishna. There is a province called Avanti, and there was a king, had a very beautiful daughter, and her name was Mitrabinda. So Krishna went and claimed her. The father was very happy to allow his daughter to Krishna, offer his daughter to Krishna. Then Krishna had Kunti, Queen Kunti had a sister named Shrutakirti. So Shrutakirti had a daughter, her name was Bhadra. So that was girl was also offered to Krishna, and the Madhura Raj, the daughter, the king of Madras, king of South India, had a daughter called Lakshmana, and Krishna was married to her. So in this way, these were the eight principal queens of Krishna. Rukmini, Satyabhama, Jambavati, Kalindi, Nagnajiti, Mitrabrinda, Bhadra, and Lakshmana. Now, there was one terrible demon. His name was Narakasura. Narakasura was not an ordinary person. Narakasura was the son of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and Mother Earth, Bhudevi. So, his another name of this demon was Bhoumasura, the son of Bhumi. Therefore, his name was Bhouma Asura, the demon. Actually, when Varahadev rescued Earth, do you all remember that incident? Hiranyaksha took away all the gold from the Earth. And gold actually maintains the balance in the orbit for the Earth. And Earth lost its balance and fell out of the orbit into the lower region. And the Lord, appearing as a transcendental boar, rescued Varahadev and appearing as Varahadev, rescued Mother Earth and placed her back onto the orbit. Now, seeing that, Hiranyaksha became extremely upset. And as a result of that, a fight ensued and Hiranyaksha was killed by Varahadev. Varahadev came to rescue Earth planet from this demoniac influence of Hiranyaksha. Now, coming in contact with the Lord, Mother Earth wanted his association. And as a result of their association, a son was born. And this son is Narakasura, an extremely powerful person. And Dharani Devi, Bhudevi, got to know that her son has become so abominable in his behavior that he is causing an extreme disturbance into the planetary system. So she knew that this personality would cause a lot of disturbance and the Lord himself will come to kill him. Therefore, she actually made a condition. In one hand, she asked that let my son become extremely powerful and so forth, and that he would be ruling over the earth planet and so forth. But understanding that this person may be killed by the Lord himself, she made a condition that please don't kill him without my permission. If you have to kill him, then do it with my permission. In this way, she tried to protect her son. Please do it with my permission. Don't kill him without my consent. So, so Narakasura was causing a lot of disturbance, and as a result of that, Indra once came to Krishna and reported to him that, look, this Narakasura is causing so much disturbance and he has stolen the umbrella of Varuna. He has stolen the kundala, the earrings of Aditi, the mother of the demigods. And he also has taken over part of the heavenly planet in the form of Mandara Mountain. And so he, then Krishna said, okay, I will take care of him. So Krishna called Garuda and he took Satyabhama with him. Just him and Satyabhama. And went and challenged Narakasura. A terrible fight ensued. And first of all, his city was so well protected that first thing was the city was protected by directions. All the 10 directions of the city were protected. Then the city was protected by water. Then the city was protected by fire. So in this way there were reinforcement of the city. And so that nobody could actually enter into the city of Narakasura. So with 5 elements and direction, the city was being protected. Earth, water, fire, air, fire and air. But Krishna, with his club and disc, shattered all those barriers, all those protections, and entered there and challenged Narakasura. And the city was actually protected by Narakasura's general. His name was Mura. And he was a demon with 5 heads. Anyway, a terrible fight first ensued between Mura and Krishna. And although these individuals are extremely powerful, but in front of Krishna, they're totally insignificant. But Krishna gives them a good fight. There's a good fight. A terrible fight. Like, can you imagine this demon with his huge, gigantic mace is hitting Krishna on his chest, hitting Krishna on his head. Sometimes Krishna is escaping those attacks. Sometimes he is not able to, and it is smashing him on the chest. Like, this is how they are fighting. And then finally, Krishna cut his head off with, all 5 heads were cut off with his chakra. Because it was cut off, because Krishna killed the Mura demon, therefore Krishna got the name Murari. Yeah. The name of Krishna, Krishna's name as Murari came from this incident. Then Murari's 7 sons attacked Krishna and they also got killed. Krishna could kill them right away, but Krishna was just playing his pastimes. He was playing. Like if there is no competition, then there won't be any excitement. Right? So Krishna creates that excitement through his pastimes. So he kills the 7 sons of Mura. Then finally, Krishna killed Bhaumasura with his chakra. And how it happened? Bhaumasura now, after the fight was so terrible, and then it seemed that Krishna cannot defeat him. So finally he took up the trident, which he received from Lord Shiva. And with it he is about to hurl the trident onto Krishna. At that point, Satyabhama could not tolerate that. He said, please, my lord, kill him. And then Krishna released his Sudarshan Chakra and severed the head of this demon. Now you understand why Krishna took Satyabhama with him in such a exploit? Because Bhudevi is an expansion of Satyabhama. So the condition was that Krishna would kill Bhaumasura only with the permission of Bhudevi. And because Bhudevi is an expansion of Satyabhama, now you remember, Krishna has, especially when you go to South India, you see that Narayan has Lakshmi on both sides. On the left hand side is Shri Devi, and on the right hand side is Bhudevi. Krishna's potency manifests in 3 ways, Shri, Bhu, and Leela. So Shri Devi is on the left hand side, Bhudevi is on the right hand side. So this Bhudevi is Satyabhama. Or Bhudevi is Satyabhama's expansions. And this Bhudevi is Mother Earth. Bhudevi's expansion is Mother Earth. So Krishna fulfilled that condition. Only with her permission he would kill. So therefore only when Satyabhama said, kill him, please, my lord. I can't bear to see this anxiety go through this anxiety anymore. So then Krishna released his chakra and killed Narakasura. Now Narakasura had kept 16,100 princesses, young princesses, in his prison. So they were imprisoned in Narakasura's prison. And he was actually waiting to fulfill certain number. And the number was 16,108. He was waiting for kidnapping another 8 princesses and then he would marry them. Imitating the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, but instead, the Supreme Personality of Godhead came and killed Narakasura and rescued all these princesses. So those princesses, they appealed to Krishna that, look, we have been kidnapped and imprisoned by this demon. So no one will marry us. Because in the Vedic culture, if a woman has even been touched by another man, nobody accepts her. So they appeal to Krishna that You are the shelter of all the suffering souls. Those who are in distress, you are their only hope. So please, Lord, you deliver us. So Krishna then accepted them as his wives. So in this way, Krishna got married to how many wives? 16,108 wives. So, now Krishna, I told yesterday we discussed about Krishna's encounter with Krishna's getting back Pradyumna from Sambarasura's clutches. So Pradyumna came with his wife. What was his wife's name? Mayavati. Thank you. And who was Pradyumna in his previous life? Kamdev. Who is Kamdev's wife? Rati. Very good. So Kamdev and Rati had a son. Actually, all of Krishna's wives had, Krishna got 10 sons out of each wife. So, Pradyumna had, his first son was Aniruddha. So, this Aniruddha had a very interesting incident with his wife, Usha. Now, do you want to hear that story? Although it's kind of deviating from Krishna, but still, it's Krishna's Dwarka pastimes, and this has been described in Srimad Bhagavatam. So, you see, Bali, you remember Bali Maharaj? Who is Bali? Very good. Bali is Prahlad Maharaj's grandson. What is the name of Prahlad Maharaj's son? Virochan. Very good. So Prahlad's son was Virochan. Virochan's son was Bali. And Bali's son was Vana. Banasura. So he was the eldest. Bali actually had 100 sons. And Banasura was the eldest. And Vanasura's kingdom was Sonitpur. Now, Sonit, you know Sonit, what does Sonit mean? Sonit means blood. So his city was known as the city of blood. Sonitpur. A perfect demon. Dwelling in the city of blood. So, and by the grace of Lord Shiva, Banasura had 1,000 arms. He had 1,000 arms. And he was so powerful. And these personalities, they are so proud with the power and strength, they always want to fight and defeat others. And this is how they derive their joy. A Kshatriya, generally the warriors, derive their joy by fighting. What's the expression? Adrenaline. So that is a perfect example of a Kshatriya. So Vanasura was a great devotee of Lord Shiva. And Banasura actually had the benediction from Lord Shiva that he will give him all protection. It all happened in a very wonderful way. Lord Shiva was dancing This art actually came, this art, natya, or dancing, the art of dancing, art of music, etc., comes from Lord Shiva, actually. Lord Shiva is one exponent of this art, dramatic art, fine arts, and Narad Muni is another source. So Lord Shiva was dancing, and Vanasura was playing the mridanga with 1,000 hands. He was playing simultaneously 500 drums with his 1,000 hands. So Lord Shiva became so pleased that he wanted to give him a benediction. So what did Vanasura want? That you please protect me in my city. So this Shwanitpur city was protected by Lord Shiva. So this is just the background. Now Vanasura had an extremely beautiful daughter. Her name was Usha. So when Usha came of age, one night she dreamt that she was in association of an extremely handsome person. And when she woke up with a cry, "My Lord, please don't leave me, please don't leave me." So her friend, who was also sleeping next to her, her name was Chitralekha. Chitralekha was Banasura's chief minister's daughter. So Chitralekha asked him, "Hey, what happened? Who are you talking about?" So she said, she told her about the dream. And she also disclosed that, "Look, I won't be able to survive without him. So please do something about it. In his separation, I'm already my heart is completely shattered." And Chitralekha also saw that day by day, Usha was becoming emaciated. So Chitralekha took it upon herself, "Tell me, where can I find him?" He said, "Look, I don't know who he was. I just saw him in a dream." So then Chitralekha, who was extremely skilled with artistic ability, she was extremely talented lady actually, talented girl. So Chitralekha started to draw different personalities, starting from the denizens of heaven, starting from Indra. And Usha said, "No, not this one, not this one, not this one." Then finally, in this way Chitralekha painted all the well-known personalities in the heavenly planets and other planetary systems, demigods, Gandharvas, Kinnaras, and then finally she came to the human beings. And she drew the painting of Krishna. Then she painted Pradyumna. And when she painted Pradyumna, Usha became a little bashful. And then she painted Pradyumna's son, Aniruddha. So she became so bashful seeing him that she just casted her glance downwards in total embarrassment. So this way Chitralekha could recognize that this is the person. Now Chitralekha was an expert in mystic power also. So Chitralekha, understanding that this is the person that her friend actually fell in love with, so Chitralekha, one night, went into Krishna's Dwarkapuri. Although Dwarkapuri was extremely well guarded, but she could enter into that city. And she kidnapped Pradyumna in his sleep, made him fly all the way from Dwarka to Shonitpur, brought him into the palace, and offered him to her friend. And Aniruddha also woke up and found himself, so Chitralekha told him the whole episode, how his friend fell in love with him just by seeing him in a dream. So Usha and Aniruddha started to stay there in the now actually in that area no male member was ever allowed. This is the royal palaces in the Vedic culture was so well guarded that the male members were not allowed into the internal part of the house where the ladies stayed. Now due to the association, Usha started to display the signs of association with a male. And they suspected something, what is happening? And the guards became very worried that we are guarding that place so well, so nicely, that nobody can enter here. But here, there is an obvious sign of this princess, unmarried princess, having association of a male. So just to save their skin, they went and reported to Banasura that we suspect something and we don't know what happened, and please, we wanted to report to you before something terrible happens. So Banasura immediately went to the inner part of the lady's house. And there he found Usha with Aniruddha. And he became extremely angry. But although he felt that this is a nice match, Usha was so beautiful, and this young, handsome person, they look perfect, as perfect match, but still, to protect the honor of the family, he decided to take action. So he ordered his army to arrest him. And Aniruddha, there was no weapon there. All he could find was an iron rod. And with this iron rod, he dealt with the entire army of Vanasura and wiped it out. And so he left the palace. But when he was leaving the palace, then Banasura confronted him. And he knew various mystic power, and with the grace of Lord Shiva, he knew the art of, by the mercy of Lord Shiva, he knew the art of arresting somebody with the snake bond. He released that, and the snakes went and bound up Banasura. And these were not ordinary snakes; these are Lord Shiva snakes. So Aniruddha now is captured by Banasura, and he put him in prison. So, when the members of the Jodhu family saw that this boy is missing, they were very perturbed. What happened? Then Narad Muni went and reported to them that this boy has been, what actually happened, and now he is in prison of Vanasura. So they considered that this was a disgrace to their family's reputation, so they decided to attack. So all the Jadus got prepared to attack Shonitpur. And they went with, the whole army went, And Krishna went, Balaram went, Sattaki went, Pradyumna went. Naturally, Pradyumna's own son, so he was extremely upset. But on the Vanasura side, who is guarding Lord Shiva, along with his son Kartikeya, Ganesha, and Nandi, Bringi, and all the ghosts and hobgoblins, and plus Vanasura's army. So a terrible fight actually ensued. So when Vanasura saw that his army was being defeated by Krishna, he came to confront Krishna. So then Krishna actually put him into a great difficulty. So when Vanasura was in such difficulty, he came with 500 bows, with his holding in his 1,000 arms. He released 4 arrows from each bow. 2,000 arrows were hurled towards Krishna. But Krishna with his chakra cut them off. And in this way a terrible fight ensued. Vanasura was in great difficulty. He was, at that time, there was a Devi that Vanasura used to worship, and she used to treat Vanasura as her son. So she just appeared in the battlefield naked. So seeing that, Krishna just turned his face away, because it's not appropriate to look at a naked woman. And in taking advantage of that, Vanasura escaped from the battlefield. And in the meantime, Lord Shiva was fighting with Krishna and causing a havoc with his sons. And so in the meantime, Vanasura comes back with his, now carrying different types of weapons with his 1,000 hands. And he hurled all those weapons to Krishna. But Krishna this time not only cut all those weapons to pieces with his chakra, but he instructed the chakra to cut off Vanasura's hands also. So 996 hands of Vanasura was chopped off by the chakra. And he was left with only 4 hands. And Vanasura then went and prayed to Lord Shiva that he assured him protection. So Lord Shiva said, look, I can't deal with Krishna because he's my Lord. And so this is how Vanasura and Lord Shiva instructed Vanasura to surrender to Krishna. So Vanasura came back to his senses. And Krishna also told, Lord Shiva asked him, please don't kill him. He is my devotee, and it's for my sake, please don't kill him. So Krishna also told that, no, I won't kill him, because I gave the assurance to Prahlad Maharaj that I won't kill any member of his family. So Krishna actually gave Prahlad Maharaj the assurance. And Vanasura was in that family, so Krishna assured that, no, I won't kill him, but I cut off his hands with which he became so arrogant and so powerful. So so in this way, finally, Vanasura was, from Vanasura's clutches, Aniruddha was rescued, and Aniruddha, Vanasura offered his daughter Usha to Aniruddha, and Krishna and Balaram with the army took Usha and Aniruddha back to Dwarka. And with great pomp, they were married. So in that fight, another interesting episode that happened, Like when Lord Shiva became completely desperate in that fight, he actually released Sivajwara weapon. Jai Shri Shri Gornitai ki jai. Jai Shri Shri Rukmini Dwarkadhish ki jai. Jai Shri Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani ki jai. So Sivajwara came as a blazing fire, burning everything. So when that happened, when the soldiers were burning to ashes, so they all cried out for help to Krishna. Then Krishna released Narayanjwara. And Narayanjwara subdued the Sivajwara and created the cold in which all the demons were shivering. And being defeated by Lord Narayan's weapon in this way, Lord Shiva actually came to his senses. And he fell at the feet of Krishna, begging forgiveness. So Krishna said, it's fine, don't worry. So in this way, in Krishna's pastimes, we will see time and time again that Lord Shiva sometimes went against Krishna. Just as sometime Indra went against Krishna, Brahma went against Krishna. This is just to point out that Krishna is the supreme. No matter how powerful other demigods or other personalities may be, but Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. Okay, at this point I can invite some questions. Yes, Vikashananda. Yeah. Okay, good point. Very good point. There are two reasons behind that. One reason is, you see, in the material nature, everything happens by karmic reactions. Right? It's karma. Like, Krishna doesn't interfere in the material nature. In the material nature, things happen just by karmic reactions. Now, by karma, by karmic principles, some people become extremely powerful. By performing austerities and penances. Like you remember Hiranyakashipu? He practically became immortal by performing austerity. So these demons become extremely powerful performing austerity. So much so that no one in the material nature can deal with them. You see, the arrangement in the material nature, Krishna's arrangement in the material nature is through the demigods, devas. As I mentioned, different departments, and they are predominating those departments. And when they are not able to deal with them, then Krishna has to come and establish the law and order. Like when the system doesn't work, when the system fails, then the king has to come and set things right. Otherwise, the king has a department. Like, I don't know in America, but in India, you have noticed, when the ministry cannot deal with it, then the president takes over and establishes president's rule. Right? It's something like that, you know. Then Krishna comes to deal with that. Another consideration is that, you know, Krishna comes to the material nature to establish his supremacy so that everybody surrenders to him. Ultimately, what is the goal of life? The goal of life is to surrender to Krishna. And through his pastimes, he actually teaches us that how the goal of life is to surrender unto Him. Now, how does He do that? How does He demonstrate that? He creates an extremely powerful personality. And then He proves Himself to be greater than Him. It's something like establishing the best and then proving Himself to be better than the best. He establishes the greatest, then He proves Himself to be the greater than the greatest. And this is how He establishes his position in the planet. Yes, Kandarpa? Devotees worship demigod. Okay. Yeah, okay. Okay, good. Yeah. So, yes, we don't worship demigods, but at the same time, we are not disrespectful towards the demigods. Right? Say, you may know the CEO of the company, but when you go to that office, you accept, respect the management structure. It's not that you say, well, oh, he's a manager, I don't care. No. You know, like, you consider, although you may know the president of the company, but you also respect the structure that he has put in place. You may know the chairman of the bank, but when you go to collect the money, you go to the clerk, submit your check and take the money from him. Right? So, similarly, you see, the point is that generally people worship demigods for some material gains. So what Krishna is actually pointing out, there is no need to worship the demigods for any material gain, because material gains are not really necessary. Just surrender unto me. So for material gains, we don't worship the demigods. But in order to win Krishna's favor, yes, we can worship demigods. Therefore, the devotee's approach to demigods is please allow us to become a servant of Krishna. Please bless us that I can become a devotee of Krishna. Then the demigods will bestow their mercy. Well, whatever ability they have, they will grant the good fortune of becoming a devotee of Krishna. And Prabhupada is pointing out in Srimad Bhagavatam, the gopis who are worshipping Katayani, right, Durga Devi. Rukmini was worshipping Durga. Radharani is worshipping Surya Dev. But what are they actually asking them for? Please allow me to have Krishna as my husband. Okay, fine. In one, good point. Like one aspect of Bharatanatyam is worshipping Ganesh at the beginning, right? So, she's worshipping Ganesh, I mean, she's apparently, through her dance, worshipping Ganesh, but for what? So that I can please Krishna with my dance. Right? Yes.
I have a question. Remember we their strength, or did they really have so many heads and so many arms? The reason I ask is because in
yeah.
the age, there are still demoniac personalities. Could we see anybody with multiple heads? Or multiple
yeah, because they're miniature demons. In Kali Yuga, everything has become miniature. Now, the other way of looking at my first point to your question will be that Prabhupada emphatically told us to accept the scripture as it is. Don't give any connotations according to your limited reasoning ability. Right? And how should we look at it? We should look at it as just consider if an ant is told about human beings by another ant, what will that ant think? Right? Similarly, in the cosmic arrangement, we are just not even like ants. We are even smaller than that. So there are entities who are much more powerful. Like, you know, consider a human being in relation to an ant. There are entities whom our ability, our resources are like that of an ant's. Yes. Anyway. Good point. If Krishna is testing your faith, then do you want to pass or fail? And how to pass it? Just accept it. Like, you know, recognizing our situation. Like if you tell an ant, you know, there's a human society, there the cars move with a speed of 120 miles an hour. What will the ant think? Right? Oh, come on, it's a fairy tale. So that is how we have to accept it. Like, we have to understand that we are dealing with the inconceivable. And you put it very nicely, Krishna. Let's take it as Krishna is testing our faith. We believe it. Yes, we believe it. Because everything is possible. Yeah? Even? Spiritual, yeah. Well, it is not, those things are not existing in the spiritual world, but the absence of spiritual factor is causing that. Right? Like, for example, in spiritual world, there is no anxiety. Right? That absence of that situation is causing us anxiety. You get the point? like spiritual world is full of light. So that means spiritual world, there is no darkness. So we cannot say that because there is no darkness in spiritual world, there cannot be darkness here. No. The absence of light is causing the darkness. In spiritual world, there is no suffering. Or rather put it this way, spiritual nature is full of joy. When the joy is missing, then it is suffering. Absence of joy is suffering. Yes, Devaki Nandan. How did you get the name? Harinam? No, I mean, your parents are devotees? Your parents are devotees? Okay. Actually, when you said Devaki Nandan, I thought you already initiated. That's why I asked you, who is your spiritual master? Yeah, go ahead.
Says in 9:34, Bhagavad Gita, Man Manabhava, he's telling Arjuna that I am that personality that performs sweet pastimes in Mathura, Dwarka, and Vrindavan. And he's telling Arjuna, I am that Krishna who performs sweet boyhood pastimes in Vrindavan, and you should remember this. And Srila Prabhupada also said in the Back to Godhead magazine in 1972, I believe, that to fully surrender to Krishna, 9:34 is key to 4 points. Engage Mayas in worshiping me, offering obeisance, worship me, being completely absorbed in me, sure you come back to me. Are these all truths about the Bhagavad Gita? The topmost, remembering Krishna's sweet boyhood pastimes in Vrindavan?
You see, Bhagavad Gita is not really dealing with Vrindavan. Vrindavan is beyond that. But the points that you made is very, very pertinent, very correct. But I'll say there's a fifth point. The fifth point is surrender to Krishna.
Is what?
Surrender to Krishna.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, then when you surrender to Krishna, then by Krishna's mercy, Vrindavan will be revealed to you through Bhagavatam. Therefore, the way to enter into Bhagavatam is with total surrender. We have to enter. The qualification to enter into Bhagavatam is through total surrender. Okay? Hare Krishna. Yes, Giridhari.
The demons that Lord Krishna kills in Mathura and Dwarka, do they also represent some anartha like they do in Vrindavan?
Bhakti Vinod Thakur explained that. Different demons being different types of anarthas. Yes. So but in reality, these demons are demons.
Yeah.
But if you consider that your heart is Vrindavan, then these are the representations of the demons individually in our hearts.
Because I've heard about the ones in Vrindavan, but the ones in Dwarka are the
Dwarka,
ones...
No, Dwarka I don't...
No.
Bhakti Vinod Thakur did not mention about the demons in Dwarka.
Also, how can we understand that Narakasura was a demon, yet he was born from the Lord and Mother Earth? How is it seems kind of...
Yes, it can happen.
It can happen. Okay.
And bad association. Yes.
In reading Srimad Brihadbhagavatamrita, we heard the pastime of Gopakumara going through the whole universe. He goes to different places and he doesn't feel the satisfaction, even when he's in Vaikuntha, even when he's in Dwarka. So, my question is that Srila Prabhupada came to the words that he's preaching and establishing temples all over the world. Isn't it that from all the conclusions of what we read that Prabhupada wants is to all his followers to go to Goloka Vrindavan? And obviously, every one of us might have fairly close yet a particular relationship with Krishna, we don't know yet. But what he wants us is famous to go to Goloka Vrindavan, even while being like Dwarka pastime. Is that correct?
Yeah, right. Like Gop Kumar, just you consider yourself. If you go to Vaikuntha, will you be satisfied? Now that you got to know about Vrindavan, no matter wherever you go, you won't be satisfied until you reach Vrindavan. Right? Of course, if somebody wants to make a compromise, that's a different thing. If you think, oh, heavenly planet is a nice place, just as sometimes people make compromise, in spite of joining ISKCON, they think, oh, now I have come to America. So that is my Golok Vrindavan. So, but those who are really interested in their spiritual life, they will not settle for anything less than Vrindavan. Yes?
Is there any specific message or is there any commentary of other acharyas or Ananda in that class?
The commentary is very simple in this respect. As Prabhupada, I can just quote Prabhupada's comment in this respect, that be prepared to offer everything to Krishna. What to speak of when Krishna himself is asking for something? Like, consider this to be your greatest good fortune. Krishna is asking. Because if you do that, if you offer that to Krishna, then your life has achieved its perfection. If Krishna accepts something, then our life achieves its perfection. What to speak of when Krishna is asking for something? So that should be our understanding. Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai. Aniruddha?
No.
Aniruddha was killed once actually, but that's in another occasion. When Aniruddha was leading the army to subdue the entire planet for Ugrasen to perform the Ashwamedh sacrifice, then when they were encounter with Balwala, Not Aniruddha. Sunandana was killed. Not Aniruddha. But then Krishna actually revived him. If we have time, then we can narrate that incident. That's a very interesting incident, actually. Yeah. No, Aniruddha did not. No. Oh, Abhimanyu. Yeah. That Narad Muni is acting as a catalyst to accelerate the excitement in the pastimes. No? And actually he does that being provoked by the demigods. Demigods tell him, Narad Muni, please tell Krishna to do something. Please arrange something because it's becoming too unbearable for us. It's filling us with too much anxiety. So just as demigods told Narad Muni that, that why doesn't Krishna kill Kamsa? He has come to kill Kamsa. Why is it taking so long? So then Narad Muni goes and tells Kamsa, you know, Kamsa, this Krishna is actually the son of Vasudeva. The prediction that you heard, he is the one. So apparently it seems that Narad Muni is, you know, going against the devotees, you know, going against Krishna. Yeah, but the real reason actually is he's acting as a catalyst. So I'll stop now. Today, the next session will start at 2:30 because we'll have to finish the second session by 4:30 or before 4:30 because the Aratik will be at 4:30. Mm.